Hey, Barstool listeners, you can find every episode of this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
We have a very special guest today, a guy that we've been trying to track down for a minute now. I know, Poppy, you've probably been trying to track him down for a little bit longer. That's Keenan Thompson, who just got off a red eye from hosting the People's Choice Awards last night.
Right.
That's crazy.
And I mean, I took my daughter to dance class this morning, man.
Look at that.
Come on, man.
It's no time to waste.
Come on. It's good to see y'all.
Have you guys met in person before?
No, this is the first time
you guys have met?
Yeah, this is the first time,
man. Oh,
it's an absolute pleasure, number one. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's my honor, man.
That was the whole thing about doing the character, was that you exude such joy. You know what I'm saying? That was like my main focus. It's just like,
that's what's up.
You come out happy. You know what I'm saying? As soon as I slide out there, it's like party time.
He already know. He already know.
Amazing.
We're going to change the menu now.
Gonna happen. So I saw you did an interview where, because you've done many Steve Harvey impressions, and you talked about how he in the beginning got upset about it, and he was like, yeah, people tell me that you were clowning on me and this and that, and then you got to a point where he was cool with it.
Yeah,
I mean, like, I feel like you just thought it was funny, like you were like tweeting out the clips immediately.
I tell you what, man, the thing is that people sometimes don't realize that when someone like him take his time to, you know, in a funny way to show people and talk about someone, that has a value to me. You know what I'm saying? The thing is that I'm a person that I don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some other people that they care too much about, you know. I mean,
what other people think.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't really care. The only one thing that I want is, okay, let's increase a little bit a different menu. Right, chicken and beans, all this shit.
Because, menu out.
Hey, look at me, man. I eat like a motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't fucking care. You know what I'm saying? Matter of fact, I always really appreciate. I mean, this is New York right here. And by the way, it took me like an hour to get here, and I was three blocks away.
Oh yeah.
That's what. Get your ass out. Walk.
Man, this traffic is crazy. Matter of fact, the last two blocks we walked down here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
it
got
sucks.
It, man.
You get stuck in traffic. So crazy. But this is New York, man. And I got to be world recognized, you know, everywhere. But when you have someone in New York, like him, talking about you in Saturday Night Live, that's an appreciation, though.
Man,
you know what I'm saying?
I'm
that's the way I look
it
at it. You know
I'm,
what I'm saying?
I'm
that's
glad
why
you see it,
I want to meet you, man. I want to meet you for so long, though. Just to tell you thank you, man. And man, you know, like, people get to know your real personality off a camera. For a guy like me, I mean, I was matching baseball out there, but now that I'm not playing baseball, I still, you know, in the eyes of everyone because of my personality, because of what I do. And then you have a guy like Keenan talking about myself, the way he's presenting himself. That made me more familiar with people, you know what I'm saying?
1,000%.
And that's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
But everybody has a different way to look at it. But anyway, though, I really appreciate that.
That was all valid, you know what I'm saying? Because some people do take themselves a little too seriously, you know what I'm saying? Like, Steve is very, you know, meticulous about his suits and all of that. And, you know, he's also a street dude, you know, grew up in Cleveland and, you know, other places like that, I guess. Like, spent a lot of time in Chicago. So he got a lot of, you know, street ties and hard homies and stuff like that. So, you know, when I guess your homies be calling you like, hey, dog, your man's clowning you right now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It can make you take it a certain way or whatever.
Yeah.
But once he realized it was more so out of admiration than anything, that's where most of my impressions come from. You know, I'm not really out to burn anybody specifically. Like, once I definitely learned that lesson from kind of being reckless with impressions early on, you know what I'm saying? Just kind of doing willy-nilly stuff or whatever, not really caring if I'm accurate to the actual person or not, just kind of just wanting to entertain myself almost.
Yeah.
And then I learned that could rub people the wrong way, especially if you're so far off of who they are as a person, you know what I'm saying? So I try to really, you know, watch the people and also watch them in a, like, you know, regular interviews when they're being their normal self and not just performing, so I can actually get a glimpse of who they really are. And like, I could just tell, you know what I'm saying? You're just a big, happy to be there. You know, you acknowledge the fact that you're very blessed in so many different ways, and that doesn't get lost on you. Like, all those things are very obvious. And yeah, of course, you have a big lunch. You know what I'm saying?
But, you know, it's funny how people like you and him, mm-hmm. when you guys are not on the field, you know, you guys go back to, it's like I tell people, it's like they suit up for what they do. Mm-hmm. And then when they come off of it, they're a regular person like us. Like, I got to meet him at this one Super Bowl game.
Yeah, he was chilling.
Yeah. When he laugh, I laugh. Yeah.
Right.
He don't have to say anything.
Right.
He laugh, I laugh. Yeah. That's the way I look up to him. And then I got to meet him, and he was very quiet, very serious. But you know, when you get to meet someone like that, you expecting mm-hmm. what you see. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And people don't realize that's their job. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's what they do for a living. You know what I'm saying? But they are regular human beings like us. It's like me, you know, when I walk around places, people look at you like you're a superhero. No, we are not. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, it's a little tougher for you because you actually look like a superhero. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're so ginormous, bro. So it's good that you didn't let all that hype and athletic ability go to waste. Like, you could have just been lazy about it and not put in the time it takes to hit a major league fastball, bro. Like, not a lot of people can do that. You know what I'm saying? So
that's crazy.
I can't do
it. I would, like, what was it like? Because, you know, it's almost like 90% of the great baseball players nowadays are coming from the DR. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
What was it like growing? Like, what age did you first get a bat in your hands? You know what I'm saying? Like, who put it in there?
I was like nine mm-hmm. when I first started. But I play a lot of street ball, you know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. And then at some point, my dad was like, okay, I want you to start playing baseball because I think you got it. And I was like 10 years old. What the hell are you talking about? I think I got it. Yeah, you look like you have good hands and eyes coordination. Mm-hmm. And then we go from there. But it was my dad's vision. And
did he play baseball too?
He did.
He did, right?
He did, yeah. My dad almost went into the pro.
Is he a big guy?
He's a big guy, yeah. He's smaller now that he's older.
Yeah.
That happens. Get ready for it.
You know what I'm saying, guy? But I was like, damn, I thought my dad was taller when I was a kid.
Yeah, biggest man in the world. Hilarious.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But Kaden, man, we really appreciate the fact that you're here. So what you got, dog?
Yeah, so I want to know, because you were talking about how, like, you're working with, like, a team of writers, but, like, you come up with, like, your own skits as well.
Yeah.
Where did the idea come from to portray David? Is that something, like, did you see, like, a clip of him where you're like, I think I can do that? Or did someone come up to you?
Yeah, but that was
like,
Jost, I think. Jost was, you know, he's a big sports fan as well.
Yeah,
and he
was
like, I think, you know, you should try, like, doing Big Poppy. We started talking, like, well, I definitely can get his voice, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm really just doing, you know, Tony Montana, because that's kind of what you sound like, no disrespect. But, like, for somebody that doesn't, you know, has never been to DR, you know, so that's, like, the one reference you have, Scarface, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're
that's
right.
That's what you use. So, you know, he came to me, he was like, just watch this guy. You know what I'm saying? And it was like an interview that you were doing, like, after a game, and you were so jolly, and, like, all the teammates around you were so, like, it looked like you were the magnet of happiness in that mm-hmm. era. And he was like, I think this would be a fun update character or whatever. And I was like, all right, cool. What would he talk about? And that's what we had to, like, sit down and, like, grind out for hours and hours, like, mm-hmm. exactly what the game would be of mm-hmm. that impression. We know you like to eat a lot. But then we got into, like, well, what if we were just naming foods as well? You know what I'm saying? And just kept running that the game.
Fungo killed.
You know what I'm saying? And that was a lot of fun. And then the selling of, the like, the fake products was also a great
to it, too. That was another thing. This dude will sell anything.
Yeah, that was great.
Anything.
So when we had, like, those three things, it was, like, a real tight impression.
And let me ask you a question. How hard is to get into Saturday Night Live?
On the show?
Yeah, like, on the show.
It's really hard. You know, a lot of people come into it, you know, in their 30s or so, or, you know, some people in their 20s, but, like, late 20s. And if you're lucky, you know, earlier than that or whatever, but that's rare. You know, a lot of people go down the comedy road for years and years and years before they even get the chance to audition, because you got to get a lot of people's attention and approvals to even get on that list or whatever to try out for the show. So then, you know, people go do the Groundlings or Second City for years, you know, and those are improv houses and theaters that they perform in and write their own sketches and kind of learn the closest version of doing the show without being at the show. So that's usually where, when it's time to, like, find new cast members, they go to those kind of places first. Groundlings, Second City, UCB, you know what I'm saying? Upright Citizens Brigade. And, you know, that's usually where they pull from. When I was auditioning, it was like, you know, a lot of black guys were, you know, stand-ups as opposed to, I guess, the numbers in the improv houses, you know, are kind of like uneven, I guess. So there's more black stand-ups than anything. So it was like I was auditioning and having to do stand-up with everybody, even though I was more so an actor, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, in my mind. But I had been doing two comedy shows on Nickelodeon. So it was like this weird kind of, I don't necessarily have a category, so they just put me in with everybody else. And then mm-hmm. I had to, like, show them what I do. And then they made a decision where they could use it or not. You know what I'm saying? And that's kind of how it went. But it's really, really hard, and it's really, really nerve-wracking.
I ask you because I see so many talents, you know, yeah. going back and forth, being in there, going somewhere else, mm-hmm. you know. And the most important thing is about the whole thing is that the whole country is familiar with. Mm-hmm. I have a yeah. friend, Anthony, that he came to me and was like, David, you know when you really made it? Mm. When somebody's talking about you in Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what he said to me straight up.
Yeah.
It was like, I know you made it because they talking about you in that show right there.
No. I mean, the show is 47 years old. Yes. You know what yeah. I'm saying? And like has all the speed and steam to get to 50 without, you know, a hiccup. You know
yep.
what I mean?
Right.
And yep. that's a special thing. Like there's only game shows like The Price is Right is older, and then like a soap opera or something like that, and the Today Show. Those are like the only shows that are older than that show. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And
47 years, dog.
Yeah, it was the number one show last year behind football. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Number one show on television. And it's 46 years. Like, that's why that place is
hilarious,
so
man.
Known and like so respected. So yes. if you do get a chance to like get on there and stay on there, like, it's a big giant platform. You yep, reach a lot of faces. Sure. Yeah.
I remember, I can't remember what year it was, but Jeter hosted.
Yeah.
Jeter hosted probably like in like yeah. the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
What's it going to take to get my guy on a little cameo?
My guy. It's just about like, he needs to make that call and tell him that he's ready.
I don't know. How did That's you ever it. Get offered?
Well, you know what? Once somebody was trying to contact us.
Were you still playing?
I was playing, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's playing. What it was. I think that's, we were calling you to come do it with
yeah,
me.
Come do it, yeah.
Because yeah. that's the ultimate. Like, whenever you do an impression and yes.
they show up. Come, yeah.
So, yeah, I was playing still, yeah. So that was that.
Do you miss? I know, that's a dumb question. Like, maybe more specifically, what do you miss about playing, your playing year?
You know what? I think hanging out with the boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was something that you will always miss. And I still out there, you know, like connecting with people
yeah.
and, you know, making people smile and stuff like that. But
it's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's never get old. But
how many games?
162.
That's a lot, bro.
That's a lot of
plus
games.
Plus October. Games.
Plus October.
Yeah,
we were doing pretty much every year.
Yeah, 11 more times.
Yeah,
after.
So
wow.
it was out there. But I think that hanging out with the boys and you know, and just coming to this moment and get things done. It's
yeah.
just like you get a lot of people excited. Like you get a lot of people sad. Like last night at the one event here in New York, people were like, I'm a Yankee fan. Yeah. But I respect you. Like, I heard that like every 2 seconds.
That's real talk, bro.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequilacation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
When I went to Boston and we shot that Adam Sandler movie, the little Halloween movie, mm-hmm. The first day I got there, I was by myself. Like, the family stayed in New York. So it was like a Sunday. I was like, man, I wonder. It was summertime. So I was like, I wonder if there's a baseball game. And them fools was playing. Then I was like, well, let me see how famous I am and see if I can get up in there without having to pay because it's probably sold out.
Yeah.
But I would have had zero interest in going to the Red Sox Stadium if it wasn't for you, honestly. And, you know, I guess it was because, like, where Babe Ruth kind of played or something beginning and shit, like, just for that nostalgia's sake. But I don't know if that would have been enough of a driver for me personally. You know what I'm saying? Like, I really went out of my way to, like, go to the stadium by myself. Luckily, like, you know, the head office was, like, bringing me into their suite or whatever. So it was, like, you know, safe, and, you know, I didn't have to panic about being by myself or whatever. But at the same time, I it wouldn't have been enough incentive. Like, all of that, like, it's a free ticket. It's like, come to the suite, blah, blah, blah. Like, I could really just watch the game from here or something. You know what I'm saying? I'm chilling. I'm smoked. Well, I'm here. You know what I'm saying? But, like, I'm kicking it. But my fascination with having done your impression or whatever, and having also watched all those major fucking moments, you were a fucking beast, bro. Like, it was amazing. So it was crazy. I had to go see that home ground for you for how many years was it?
I was there for 14, 15.
'03 to '16.
Yeah. What's that?
That's a rhyme. That's all
I was
right.
there for the minute. Yeah. I was there for a minute.
Like, anytime that he like wants to like ask about his career now, he's like, well, how many at-bats I have?
So what did I do?
You know what it was. Too much, man. I can't keep up with all this shit, man.
It's a lot.
That's what happens when you have a catalog of work, man.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
So he obviously played in many postseasons and, you know, dominated. And like when you watch him at the plate, it's like you can see the composure and all that. Mm-hmm. Longest running cast member in SNL history. Do you get nervous at all? Like, do you get jitters to perform still, like, even having done it for as longer than anyone ever has?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that necessarily goes away. I've talked about this, you know, with a lot of different people. And Leslie Jones, one of my closest friends, like, told me the one thing that kind of stuck with me. She was just like, if you care, you're going to feel it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you don't care, then maybe you don't, you know, feel anything or whatever. And that's not necessarily good when you're an entertainer, because it's about others. You know what I'm saying? So if you don't care, then your show might go left or right and, you know, it'll be whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? And it won't matter to you anyway because you already don't care. But if you do care, then, yeah, you're going to want to put on a good show. You're going to have that angst. You're going to want to get out on that stage and get that first hit so you can get those nerves out of your way or whatever. But I try to just turn that shit into energy. You know what I'm saying? If you see me right before I'm about to go on, you just, you know, you'll see me not being able to stand still and shit like that. But I don't like to necessarily use the word nervous, you know what I'm saying? Because that could shake me out of my game, or just, you know, fuck off something simple. You know what I'm saying? Like, my first line will be something simple and I'll stutter just because I'm in my head or something. I would rather just be hype, you know what I'm saying, and use that word instead and come deliver like a grand performance instead of a shaky one.
Yeah, right.
This is your Twisted Kings, Taylor Lewan and Will Compton. Summer is right around the corner.
Nothing is better than grabbing a refreshing Twisted Tea cold on the rocks. It's got 5% alcohol. It is the perfect drink to turn up your summer. And you might be wondering, is this a sponsored ad? Yes. But the truth is, the boys, we love Twisted Tea.
Dude,
go buy it, go drink it, drink responsibly, and tell your boys to buy it as well. Let's have ourselves a hell of a summer. Oh, don't be dumb. Drink responsibly.
Twisted Tea Brewing Company, Cincinnati, Ohio. Please drink responsibly.
I tell you what, while I play, it was always that one team that, you know, I feel like I have to put some extra to compete against and to get the best out of me. But at the same time, you know, you feel like that anxiety just like popping up and make you feel like, man, what about if? What about this? What about that? You know what I'm saying? What is the one impersonation that once you had to do it or get on it, it make you feel that way?
Let's see. I mean, the ones where I was outside of my like comfort zone, sounds like.
Yes.
Definitely the first time I did What's Up With That, I think.
Really?
You know what I'm saying? Like, I was having fun with it.
Yeah.
But probably the first couple few times when people, like, before they really knew the game, you know what I'm saying? And having to, like, showcase this long thing for people to kind of, like, grasp and embrace and be able to, like, respond with laughter all in a short amount of like time throughout the whole sketch. You know what I'm saying? That it's a whole lot for people to take in. Like once everybody knew the game, it's like, oh, this is great. And let's just see whatever kind of different little things that they put into it. Like who's going to be the guest this time or whatever. But in the beginning, it was like, people were kind of looking at me like, oh shit, he's singing again? Like, what the fuck is this?
Right.
And that was always, you know, slightly off-putting because all week, everybody that's inside the joke is loving it. You know what I'm saying? But the people that are learning the joke for the first time, it's a much slower kind of process. So I had to learn not to let, you know, little missed jokes, you know what I'm saying, bother me, basically. It was just like, oh, they missed that, basically. Or maybe it wasn't funny, whatever, but just continue to push the train forward and get through it. And then once we had a complete thing, it's like a stencil, you know what I'm saying? You can take it and spray paint it on another wall, you know what I'm saying, with another host, another few guests or whatever, and it becomes a thing.
So I've never understood how that process works for SNL in terms of, like, you guys have an idea for a skit, and then, like, how much of it is improv? How much of it is, like, there are lines? Like, are sketches rehearsed beforehand? Or is the first time that you're seeing them on the TV is the first time that it's really kind of all, like, put together?
No, we work on the show all week. You know what I'm saying? Like, we start writing on Tuesday, which was last night. And we have a table read today. And that's when we start forming the show based on what we read out loud and how it, you know, gets reactions or whatever. From a, you know, a full room of people type thing. Those are kind of good gauges. And then they'll pick, you know, 10 probably out of 40, you know what I'm saying, that we read. And then we start from there. So some will be pre-tapes, which is on Friday. So they have a day kind of in between to figure out all of that, basically.
How much pressure is that? Because, like that reminds me of being
it's more
like
pressure,
college,
I think. Yeah, it's more pressure,
it's like,
I think.
Oh, man, like you have a paper due staff. Every week. And not only that, but like you don't just like if you want to give your paper to the professor, it's like, hey, like it's gonna be a couple of days late. I had something come up. It's like, nope, you every Saturday, like you gotta turn this in. And not only that, but like the viewing audience is the country, basically. It's not just like one professor that's reading it. Like how much pressure is that to
it's
come up with something in a timely manner?
Crazy amount of pressure. You know what I'm saying? Because it's the world. Like I don't really know exactly how far SNL reaches, but it's gotta be to any English speaking type country. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like probably, like, they don't necessarily get it much in Britain, which is weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. They're going to do their version of it, and they're going to do the Italian version of SNL, and they're going to do this and that. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's on everybody's zeitgeist, I think.
Yeah.
But I feel like the pressure is on a lot of other people than the cast that has been there for a few years. Like, once you're there for a few years and you kind of got it straightened out or whatever, the stress of the mystery of it all kind of evaporates and you kind of know what the rhythm is. You know what I'm saying? It's the exact same schedule every week. You know there's going to be another show because it is such an iconic thing. There's no mystery about, oh shit, are we going to like get canceled? Like there's none of that. So yes, there's an element of there's always next week, but at the same time you're building a reputation. You know what I'm saying? So if you keep striking out, motherfuckers ain't going to want to work with you. Motherfuckers ain't going to want to waste their time. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because you're pulling them down as well. So there is that stress of wanting to do well. But at the same time, it's a lot of people and some opportunities are able to happen that week and some aren't. You know what I mean? So there is some understanding of, you know, if you're absent that week, what happened? Like people really kind of know like, oh, your thing got cut for time and it's not that much of a reflection on you. But it's very stressful because we've all seen people get dismissed early in our opinions. Like some people only get one season on the show or whatever. And it goes that way for writers, too. So. Mm-hmm. The crew and the staff work really hard to schedule all that stuff in a short amount of time. They got to build, you know, sometimes they sew wigs, you know, they sew each wig by hand, by the way, each head strand of fucking hair. That shit is crazy, by the way. So when we write something crazy on a Tuesday night and it gets picked, they start building a wig maybe like that Wednesday night for the show or something. And, you know, if they need it for a pre-tape with not enough time to actually build the wig or whatever, they'll use some stock wig or something. So they have a, you know, 46-year catalog of wigs and shit that they've been using and throwing in and out and keeping. It's a wild, big, giant database of shit. You know what I'm saying? It's like a big-ass toy box. But at the same time, there's spikes in that fucking toy box. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So you got to, like, really be careful. And If you play long enough and you put your toys away and be a good person, then you can probably move on in your career in a lucrative way, especially if you're a creative person and you're self-generating anyway.
Yeah.
Kenan, you from ATL.
You see it.
That's what's up. That's what time it is. You know that I was doing the playoff this year, and I was asked on air, like, what are you going to do, Papi, if tonight? Like, I'm going to Magic City.
That's the ATL staple.
You know what I'm saying? That was the whole line. Yeah. How often you go back to ATL?
Oh, I thought you was going to ask me how often I go to Magic City. not as often as I would like anymore. My whole family's still there. Mm. But I have a place in Tampa. So we go there a lot when we're outside of New York. But my babies are in school in New York, you know what I'm saying? So that pretty much takes up most of the time. So holidays will be in Tampa and everybody from Atlanta can come down. But we did have my daughter's birthday there over the summer. So it's more sporadic than it used to be. And I've also lived in New York longer than I lived there, you know, because I started working so young.
That's what's up. Yeah. So how do you feel that New York heart embraced your career?
Incredibly, man. Like, SNL is that golden key, you know what I mean? Especially in the beginning. I used to drop that shit at restaurants, you know what I'm saying, when I would be last minute and they try to give me a hard time about whatever, how I'm dressed or I don't have a reservation or whatever, and I start name dropping, like, you know what I'm saying? I'm a cast member, this, that, and the other. I feel like you should probably let me in. It worked 99% of the time, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But then I matured and I didn't have to do that because as I was maturing, I was still on the show and my face was becoming more and more recognizable. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have to have that conversation with people. I could just be like, oh, by the way, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, let me up in here and then everything will be fine or whatever. But when you do the show well, cops, firemen, like all the first responder kind of people are very close, you know, to the audience of that show. Mm-hmm. So I would just get a lot of love from, you know, the blood that makes this city run, you know what I'm saying? And that always feels good. Like, at any given point, like, it doesn't matter if I fall out the limousine or I make a mistake and get thrown out of the, you know, the VIP or some shit. Mm-hmm. Somebody outside, you know what I mean, has got my back, no matter what. That's FedEx drivers, UPS, they all say what's up. Mm. You know, and that's what feels the realest to me, is like the people that are actually boots on the ground, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So would you consider New York home now?
It's one of them, yeah, for sure. I mean, I've been thoroughly embraced here. Like, I don't know if I can go anywhere and have a bad experience necessarily. It might turn bad because of, you know, sarcasm on my part or some shit like that, you know what I mean? But in the beginning, it's usually all love.
You know, I'm an East Coast guy, but all of a sudden, I had to be traveling to the West Coast a lot.
Uh-huh.
I have issues going to the West Coast, but once I'm there, I don't want to live.
It's the beautiful climate,
isn't it?
It's a beautiful. I love LA. I mean, I went to college out there. I went to Santa Monica College.
Oh, okay.
I was living out there for like years before I got the SNL gig. So I went from Atlanta and Orlando, because Nickelodeon was in Orlando, to LA and then to New York. So, yeah, I love LA.
I love LA, man. You go? You been to LA?
I've been to LA. Yeah, I came back with a World Series ring.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
I think. fill in that gap of years for me, because I don't know, like, after like all that Kenan and Kel, like the years between the ending of Kenan and Kel and then like the start of SNL, like, what were you doing during that time?
Hustling, you know what I'm saying? That actor's hustle, auditioning for this, that, and the other, you know, in between jobs for months or whatever, and just trying to make the fucking, you know, pennies meet, basically. Yeah. Like, all right.
Because like you're like high school years. Are you still like in high school? Are you homeschooled?
No, we graduated. And then by the time we were off Nickelodeon, I was like 21, 22 or something like
that. Right.
It was like the year 2000. So I think I was like 21, 22 or whatever. Just, you know, trying to go to school-ish. But like, I don't know. It was really kind of getting on my nerves or whatever. So I left it alone because I wanted to go to UCLA, you know what I'm saying? I didn't necessarily want to go to Santa Monica, but it was a good transfer school, you know what I'm saying, for people trying to, like, dodge that out-of-state tuition cost, basically. Mm-hmm. But I was just, like, not interested, you know what I'm saying? I was doing macroeconomics. That didn't have shit to do with cinema, you know what I'm saying? So I kind of left it alone and walked away after they told me I was still a freshman in my junior year when I was starting my junior year.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit. Like, because I was dropping classes. You know, the school is in Santa Monica and I'm working in Hollywood. You know what I'm saying? And yep. I would have like night classes and morning classes. Man, it was just a mess.
It's a grind.
Yeah, it was a grind. So I walked away from that. But it gave me my love for L.A., you know what I'm saying? And then, you know, yeah, I was like catching a job on Felicity or doing fucking Love Don't Cost a Thing, you know what I'm saying? Like little pocket jobs whenever they would come around and I can actually book it. Like living that check-by-check book life, basically. And then SNL came, and that was then. Not necessarily the end of that, but it was definitely, you know, putting a lot of fucking water on the fire as far as, you know, bills is concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was, you know, people sometimes don't understand that for us to get to where we are, we got to go through a lot of struggle, right? You did all the hustling, all the stuff. Now you got your own show, Kenan, going into the second season.
Yeah.
Talk to me about it, dog. Oh, I mean, I be sitting down laughing my ass off.
I'm glad. I appreciate it. But like you said, it's been a struggle, you know what I'm saying? Because this is the third idea I've gone around the creative cycle, like pitching and, you know, trying to get a pilot done and stuff like that and then actually getting a season order. So, you know, that's like, as you know, each idea is probably like a year or so, you know, kind of process, basically from beginning to the, you know, termination point. If you don't get a chance to shoot it, you know, it's a very slow machine out there. So it feels great. And I don't know, I didn't necessarily call the show after myself. That was a decision that they made like late in the game. You know what I'm saying? And that was just, you know, a reflection of them thinking that I was a, you know, a good performer or somebody solid to put a show on its shoulders. And I don't know, man, it's beyond exciting because it's actually happening. Season two is actually happening. It's in the can. It's shot. Cast is great. They're getting along. You know what I mean? Everybody's getting, like, we're really building like a family rapport really quickly. You know what I'm saying? And I just hope everybody enjoys the second season so we can do season three.
Would love that.
Yeah.
That's what's up.
We got to give a shout out to Whistle Pig Whiskey. It's made with 100% rye.
Oh, check it out. Whistle Pig Whiskey.
You can take a whole pack.
Yeah, talk about it, man.
So the thing about, like, they're 100% rye. I want to know, because with David as an athlete, he's looking at video. He's working out. He's conditioning. He's taking batting practice. That to him is giving 100%. For a comedian, and you're doing TV and you're doing sketch comedy, what is that process? Like, how do you give 100%? Like, what is that process for you? The behind-the-scenes work that we don't see.
Yeah, it's sitting with it and the rewrite. Like, Tina Fey, like, she'll keep a script in her back pocket all week and she'll be rewriting and fishing for a better joke up until damn near the sketch goes on television. And that kind of example has been kind of followed, you know, because Seth was a real studier.
Yep.
Is that what it is? Studier? A real student
of
her.
He's studious.
He studied her very closely.
English is fucked up.
You know, it's fucked. It's hard, right? It's a fucking hard language. And then he was like the next head writer, you know what I mean? And and watching him, like, keep a script in his back pocket, keep a pencil going, like just keep thinking and thinking and thinking and trying to just continue staying in that creative writing process. That's giving it 100% creatively. And then performance wise, you know what I'm saying? Like, I got to make sure I hit everything. And if it's not perfect, then unfortunately I got to live with it because it's a live show. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But it pisses us all off because we can't celebrate what everybody else is celebrating. Like, oh my God, that was fucking incredible. I'm like, oh, but you didn't hear me flub that line? I'm like, what line? I didn't hear that at all. So we're a lot harder on ourselves, but at the same time, we want that excellence. We want it to be perfect because that's when it can be rewatchable and work every single time. You know, when there's a flub in there, it's like, you're always going to notice the flub or whatever. But when you tell a joke perfectly, it gets the same reaction, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
If it's a good joke. That's the really cool thing about comedy.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
Are there comparisons to kind of like a big league clubhouse with the cast? Like, between all the different seasons,
has there been a dynamic where it's like everyone's kind of on the same page and people are supporting other people and people are like, you can go to this guy or this girl to for tips or pointers? Or have there been casts where it's like, oh, this feels a little competitive, where like this guy's trying to get more shine than me, and that might mean that he has to jump over me to be able to get it, or I have to jump over someone else?
Yeah, I think that was more of the folklore of the earlier days when, you know, it wasn't necessarily guaranteed that there was going to be another season. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When they're all building and they're all fighting for time. The cast is large right now, and we're fighting for time, but it's a much more supportive environment. You know what I'm saying? It's just, we're all fans and, you know, really appreciative of being on the show. You know what I'm saying? Like, the people that built the show, they had a different approach. You know what I'm saying? They were building a thing and it was like, well, you guys kind of need my talent to kind of build your thing in that perspective. Like, none of us have that, like, audacity, I don't think. We're all very humble and, like, respectful and want to do a great job, you know what I'm saying, and want to do, like, solid work and stuff. But me personally, like, I want everybody to try to figure out how to do well there. You know what I'm saying? Because it can change your life. You know what I mean? It really can. And it's been proven.
Yep. Kenna, I played in the Red Sox for about 15, 16 years. I can't fucking
remember. Yeah, 03 to 16. Yeah.
Yes, I think it was forever. And I feel like when you are part of an organization for that long, you just begin to be like a van. On a human body. You've been in SNL for 19 years, 19 seasons.
Since 03. Since you got to the Red Sox.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Crazy.
I don't think anyone has been that long there.
No.
No. But I mean, Daryl was at 14.
At 14.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that when you walk into the building, it's like... It's like when a building, a piece of the building just walk in and complete the building, and whenever they walk out, something is missing in the building.
Mm-hmm.
When you are, how do you feel about being there for that long and for the years to come?
I mean, I feel beyond blessed, you know, because I remember the feeling of unknowing, you know what I'm saying, from the audition, and this being a detrimental moment if you miss it, because it is kind of a make or break your life, because people are going to hear that you got the chance to try out for the show. And then if you don't get it, and it's like, all right, well, now you got to like scrape and scramble and do all this in your mind that you think you will never have another chance like that ever. You know what I'm saying? So
didn't that happen to Kel? Didn't Kel not make it past the first call?
He definitely auditioned for it and he didn't get it. So he's had a different, that's a good example, but he's fine. You know, he still works and, you know, he's, you know, a full family man and very happy and, you know, full in the Lord and stuff. But it's been a different journey. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, my journey has been, you know, not necessarily smooth because I had to earn it every Saturday night. But once I did earn it, it's been kind of red carpet, city, velvet ropes ever since. You know what I'm saying? I have to maintain that. Like, I can't just stay on the show and just keep flopping or whatever. So I keep performing at a high level, and I think that keeps impressing people. So every now and again, something like Black Jeopardy will pop up where it's like, oh, something new. Like, we can do this, you know, a bunch of different times. Or Steve Harvey's about to have a judge show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, we're going to be all over that shit. You know what I mean? So
You
just got to find ways to keep reinventing. But I do have some guilt. Like, am I in somebody's way? Or am I doing the show a disservice for being there that long? Because now it looks like the show should have my face as opposed to it just being its institution that it's always been. You know what I mean? Because I've been there almost half the time now, which is fucking crazy to think about. You know what I mean? As long as that show has been out, I've been there almost half the time. That's so wild, you know, because all we see when we think about the glory days is, you know, the original seven, and then you see like the Dana Carvey years and then the Mike Myers years and Will Ferrell and up to that point. And then like right after that, it becomes what it is now. You know what I mean? And that's been since 03.
Right.
You know, it's just wild.
That is insane.
I was checking up your resume, man. You had accomplished so many things.
Yeah.
That is crazy. What's next for Kenna?
Shit, man. We just had a big announcement yesterday. Started our little production company. That's going to allow us to incubate a lot of things. You know what I'm saying? Like development for certain people that already might have talent deals or whatever, or like production deals where they don't have development seed money type things. Like, we might be able to help facilitate that kind of shit. Hmm. And that excites me. I got a podcast going as well. I got a podcasting company. So we got a lot of shit that we want to like doing it. It's all right. I mean, I enjoy it. I do it with a friend of mine, so that helps. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Same.
But, you know, it's another it's another medium that you don't want to waste anybody's time. So you got to, like, take it seriously, make sure you have shit to talk about and edit it down to something that's meaningful. That way you can sell it.
Do you – so with podcasting, do you like interviewing people more, or do you just like talking bullshit with one of your friends?
We talk bullshit. We've only had one guest, and that was Kale. You know what I'm saying?
Like, okay.
Yeah.
When did that come out? I need to listen to this.
It's in there somewhere. Okay. Like, we're up to like episode 80 something or whatever.
So I mean, like, that's what I grew. I'm 32. So like, I grew up on that shit, and like,
go to the site and
still cannot scroll through there. Orange soda,
look at those descriptions. Yeah, you'll find it. Yeah, you probably even search it. You know what I mean? Whatever episode it is. Yeah. But that's a lot of fun. You know, it's fun to have like a weekly focus. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what, it's like, oh shit, like a thing to like really do outside of SNL, like interviews and, you know, appearances and stuff. That shit varies or whatever, but this shit has to be consistent, because, you know, once you start putting it out, like, people fucking get mad if you miss a fucking debut day. It's a real kind of medium. So that's definitely been interesting. I just, you know, I want to do my own little DreamWorks, Tyler Perry Studios kind of thing, basically.
How did you keep Keenan? Like, how did you keep who you are? Because I know that, like, a lot of people that grow up, and like, I know that you've talked about this before, about how like, you try to say, oh, I wasn't that young when I first started, but it's like, yeah, you were. Like, if I got a show on Nickelodeon when I was 15 years old, that changes you. Like, chemically, that changes you and who you would grow up to be. And you're just still like a humble, normal dude. But you've grown up and existed in the spotlight virtually your whole life.
Yes, because I'm still myself, I think, because I'm the conundrum of the family. Like, my brother's an actor too, and he's coming into his own, but he's coming into his own like later in life. When, you know, when I was younger, I was the only person like in our whole family that was like in Fat Albert or in Good Burger or in the Mighty Ducks. Like, nobody was doing that because like my parents come from Virginia and we were all kind of like very country or whatever. And our family was lucky enough to grow up in Atlanta, which was close to those kinds of opportunities. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that was never lost on me. Like, I still spent my summers, even if I was famous, like with my barefooted cousins, you know what I'm saying? That's just how we came up. And then like, the years of actually making money, I was semi-reckless and doing whatever, you know what I mean?
But what was your most reckless purchase?
I mean, it wasn't necessarily reckless, but I bought my own car at 18. It was a 4Runner.
I'm saying, you know, like, man, something humble. You just absolutely
I put rims on it.
And
changed the muffler.
You deserve it.
I tinted it out and put speakers in it. You know what I'm saying? Man. So I had to do it. Like,
you
my shit was beaten. I enjoyed that. But I also wasn't like, we weren't like getting overly paid like that on Nickelodeon either. Right. So it wasn't like I could be super reckless. It was just like, oh, we should probably just put this money aside for harder times, which did come once I left Nickelodeon. I was out there floating as an actor. So that will like re-humble you as well when, you know, you think that you can just go do whatever and then you're like, oh shit, I need a job. Like, oh shit, like, man, it's been a couple few months. Like, now it's been 6 months without a job. Like, all that saved up shit starts to dwindle and you get out of hand a little bit. And then you do get a job. And it's like, all right, well, when's that check coming?
Yeah.
Machine's fucking mad slow. You know what I'm saying? Calling every week, like, where's my check?
Yeah.
It's also not a good look for a famous person to be calling about a check. You know what I'm saying? So people start, you know, coming up with their own opinions, and that can like sour your reputation or whatever. And all those things can affect how you get the next job. So it's a fucking whirlwind of shit that you just need to stay focused. Keep your mouth shut, stay professional, you know what I'm saying? And never let them see you sweat, this, that, and the other, because it fucking matters. And it was a major difference between when I auditioned for Fat Albert before I was on SNL and when I auditioned for Fat Albert after I was on SNL.
Right, yeah.
It's just how it is.
How did like the Nickelodeon era come to an end? Was that you
It was just our contract was up.
And was it like a situation where you didn't want to renew or?
Yeah, because I didn't want to be like a 30-year-old on Nickelodeon. You know what I'm saying? And I was already like 21.
That's why I retired, dog.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's real. Like, you have to embrace the graduation of life. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And, you know, Andre 3000 talks about it all the time, because for us that were in high school at the time that Outkast was large, it's like, why, please give us another album, give us anything, give us a concert. But he was like, the sound and the times have moved on and they're in the hands of these younger cats, you know what I'm saying? So yep. It always make it feel like I'm trying to chase them, you know what I'm saying? And like trying to be as cool as they are as opposed to just being in my own coolness. Like that moment, that era has passed and you just got to embrace that shit.
Yep.
I love that. Yeah. We're going to get you on SNL, by the way.
Yeah, you're getting on. We're campaigning.
I want it to be like I want to be surprised. I don't even want to be like on the inside knowledge of this. I just want to like be watching one night and then you
show shit.
Up. Yeah. I feel
you're
like
serious about it.
I'm 100% serious.
You don't think you have laugh enough about myself?
Did you, by the way, have you noticed that I stopped texting you in Spanish? I mean, I stopped texting you in English. I only text you in Spanish now.
I see.
Yeah. I'll only text him in Spanish now. But he'll like text back in English.
What happened? You're having a Spanish beef or something?
I'm trying. Yeah. I'm trying to learn. And I'm trying to get acclimated to the situation.
Get yourself a Spanish girlfriend. You will learn in 2 days.
Done.
Right.
Done. Well, we got to go back to Miami now. Kenan Thompson, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. This was really cool.
My pleasure. Long time coming.
Yeah. Check out the series.
Yes.
SNL. I mean, it feels weird to have to plug your shit. It's like, who doesn't know about SNL?
Plug the new
shit.
Plug the podcast.
Yeah,
it's called
yeah.
You already
check
know.
Out the podcast, you know, iTunes, Spotify. Yeah. Get in there. But yeah, we're gonna work on getting Poppy on SNL. Like that's gonna be
100%.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, dog. Appreciate it, man.
Appreciate y'all.
Thanks for the love.
Most definitely.
You got it, baby.
I can't believe that's the first time you guys met.
Yes.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
He's running, I'm running, man.
That is true.
He's running.
I'm all over the place.
Yeah.